All right, today is July 23rd, 2023. This is Mobius Podcast 467. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend, a good doctor, John Westfall. Good day. It's afternoon where you are, I guess. We're 5 hours apart. Yeah, we're 5 hours apart, so still morning for me. All right, so we're back on Teams this week. Although I've switched to a MacBook Air on a M1 chip, just because it runs cooler and it's getting kind of warm in these here parts. Not quite as warm as other parts of the U.S., but oddly. You might think Hawaii's like really hot, but we're actually, because we're surrounded by water, I think we've got more moderate temperatures, although we're generally warmer than, you know, everywhere else on average. We don't get the extremes. Anyway, that's your meteorological lesson for today. I got a couple of things. And John has a suggestion for me. So I've been using bit.ly, bit.ly, as my URL shortener for years because it's, well, A, it's free. It's pretty good. And it has some pretty decent statistics. You know, nothing fancy in the free version, but, you know, how many, where in the world, that kind of stuff. However, when Twitter changed their API policies, I found that I could not log into bit.ly using my existing Twitter authenticated account on new devices. It still runs fine. If I'm logged in somewhere, you know, I can still use it, certain URL, see stats, that's not the problem. But if I log into a new device, like when I got a new iPhone or, you know, when I started using the MacBook Air, so this has been going on for a long time. You know, I just couldn't do it. I had to create a new free account, which has no statistics at all. It creates a shortened URL, but that's it. So I went back to TinyURL, which I have not used for years. And the free version gives you just very basic count on how many times something has been clicked. And, you know, honestly, the other information is useful or interesting, but all I care about is, like, you know, how many times did somebody click on a link for this podcast, for example. And so I am using TinyURL now. Now, John put a note in our show notes that he said he's using something called it depends how you can say your LS or YOURLS.org. At any rate, it's spelled YOURLS.org. John, can you tell me? I've never heard of it.
I think it's just URLs is how I'm always pronounced it. But the way that it works is it's simply a little PHP MySQL application. You run on a Linux web server or on a stack, and you self-host it. And so I have a variety of links that are at subdomain go.johnwestfall.com, and I can create whatever I would like from that subdomain with whatever short code I need, and I can get full tracking, and it'll generate a QR code for it and all these other things. So I definitely prefer that in that I can always preserve where, you know, worst case scenario, I could get rid of the software entirely and just do rewrite rules on that domain if I ever needed to keep links working in the future and the software died. So again, sometimes just better to own the infrastructure if you can, in a sense.
Yeah, roll your own, as they used to say in the 30s, I guess. I was not there back then, if you're wondering about it. I was thinking the other alternative pronunciation is yourls.org, but yeah, more or whatever. So anyway, I guess the mini theme this morning is, before we get to some of John's kind of thematic comments and observations, is going back to some things. So I think I mentioned bit.ly thing months and months ago and finally decided to switch over because I was so annoyed. The other thing I'm less annoyed about, actually not annoyed at all, kind of pleased, is so I bought an Echo Dot 5th Gen during the recent Amazon Prime days. It was 2 days of sales. So I got Echo Dot 5th Gen for, I think, $24. And it came with a Wi-Fi Bluetooth bulb, which is kind of neat. Although I had to find some place in my house that actually still could have a bulb. We have all these insets in the house, which my wife just changed a few months ago. So the reason I did that is because I love my Echo Show 5, but A, it was starting to flicker and needed to be replaced. And B, I really wanted a mesh node, extender node for the Eero, the Amazon Eero that I only earlier this year, like January, got working. I think I have we have a whole podcast on why that was a problem. But in any case, so the Eero is working fine. It's my secondary Wi-Fi, and it was a mesh without anything meant to mesh to. So I wanted to get, there's a few dead spots in my tiny home. And so I picked up the Echo Dot to kind of cover those little dead spots. And it does a reasonably good job. It's limited to 100 megabits per second down, which is fine. You know, that to me, as I've said many times, 100 megabits per second down is plenty fast, especially in areas that I'm really not in very often. I found out just like yesterday that the Echo Dot 5th generation, which is the one I bought, has a thermometer that registers ambient temperature. Yeah, I thought that was, and I'm kind of a weather geek. And it's getting kind of warm here. Not quite as warm as where you are, John, I think, but it's getting kind of warm. And so you can just say, what is the inside temperature? And the keyword is inside, and it will use its internal thermometer to report its surrounding air temperature. If you just say, what is the temperature without the word keyword inside, it will draw from, I don't really know which weather source it draws from, but I know it's way more accurate than whatever Google uses for its Google Assistant weather source. But anyway, yeah, so the Echo Dot 5th generation, in addition to being a mesh node, extender node, it also has a thermometer, which I thought was, I really like that. the actual ambient temperature versus whatever the closest weather station is, or whatever the, Amazon thinks the closest weather station to me is. And it's usually pretty accurate, by the way. I have a infrared thermometer that I use to check things against. So there you go. Not only a Wi-Fi mesh extender node, but also a thermometer. So I'm pretty pleased with this $24 purchase, plus the bulb.
Yeah, that's a nice extra thing to have inside of it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I also recorded in between our last podcast, John, and this one, recorded a little mini podcast, like 4 minutes long, mini podcast 38, about the Abjiga K61 lav mic. So I think I mentioned to you, Abjiga said, and I didn't ask them to do this. This is just really nice of them, I thought. I bought a Abjiga wireless lavalier microphone pair a couple of months ago, and it just does not record with enough volume on iOS, iPadOS devices. It works fine on Android devices. In fact, I've used it for two podcasts already, two in-person podcasts where I hand, my guests. First was Paul Lawler, and then more recently, Jared Kuriva. I hand them one of the pair. They stick it on their shirt. I stick one on mine, and I put in the Abjiga has a USB-C port, so I plug that into my Pixel 7a, and off we went, and recording the podcast sounds fine. Not as good as the microphone I'm using right now, which is in a Yeti Nano, but it's fine for a podcast, and I was able to clean it up a little. The problem, though, is the Pixel 7a runs hot. I haven't tried it with my Pixel tablet, but using similar Tensor chips, I'm sure it runs hot, too, if you try to do video or audio or basically anything streaming for extended periods of time. It's just not energy efficient for whatever reason, like the Apple devices. So it was still important to me to try to figure out someday to get an Apple compatible device, but I wasn't willing to buy anything new because it's not something I do every week like this. If it were a weekly thing that you and I, John, did, John, for sure. And probably a better audio quality mic would be in this too, but for something else, it's fine. But Abjiga offered to send me their latest update when it became available. And truth or their word, they said it was going to be August, but I just got it last week. Free of charge, gotta say. And I gotta post something on Amazon for them now that I've tested it. And I'm happy to report it works fine with Apple devices. I took an iPad mini 6, of all things, outside with me. And I plugged in, because it has a USB-C port. And I plugged in and took one of the two lavs with me. And sound quality, as I said, is not as good as just a nice, even a low to mid-range mic. But hey, for podcasts, it's fine, and I can clean it up in post if I really needed to. It's not a big deal. Does it work with Lightning devices like an iPhone? Yes, it comes with a Lightning to USB-C adapter, so you can plug that in. It also comes with a USB-A to USB-C adapter. So if you want to plug it into a desktop or something else that has USB-C-A type port, it'll work. So I'm really happy with it. I need to write a nice review with a pointer to the mini podcast I recorded to show the sound quality. Also, it comes with a charging case, which the previous model did not. So you can charge both lavs at the same time, which I needed either two cables or one at a time for the other one. So That was a nice feature. And the charging case is a little LCD display to show you the charge level, so you know when you're done. So all, and also because of the case, I don't have to use a Ziploc bag to carry my recording studio with me anymore, which is, you know, a little bit more professional looking, I guess. Although I really don't care how I look anymore. The other thing I should note is the original Abjika mic, the one that didn't work with iOS well, at least for me, I think I paid like $27, $28. It was on sale at the time. I think normal is like $29 or so. And this new one, the K61, Amazon shows it for, I think, $33 or $34. So it's just a few dollars more. It's not a tremendous, you know, price increase. And you get a lot more features, if both hardware and software, in my opinion. And just as FYI, I mentioned it in the mini podcast, but I use the third party Just Record This. I think that's the name of the app. Just Record to record it. So really happy with that upgrade. Thanks, Abjika, and I'll write a nice review because it truly does use, you know, what I want to use. Okay, now my next kind of a rant. Okay, now that I'm on a retiree income, all the services I use this year, 2023, the year, you know, I'm in full retirement, have decided to raise all their prices. So I got notifications from YouTube. Oh, shoot. What was it called? It used to be called something else. I think it's called YouTube Premium. It used to be called Google Music before, I think. So I received a thing from YouTube Premium. I got one from, I think, Netflix and HBO. Oh, now it's called Max, which is the dumbest name shift ever. And a bunch of other things. I think only Apple One, and they'll probably tell me they're going to upgrade their increase their price too. But everybody's increasing their prices. Gee, thank you, people. Maybe you should have like a senior discount. But annoying, John. It's not going to break the piggy bank, just annoying.
It's death by a thousand cuts. Yeah, then there'll be a reset at some point. You know, it's sort of like what we see in tech where, you know, the technology comes out or the service comes out, it's priced very aggressively. Everyone jumps to it because it's cool and it's got a good price point. And then the price goes up and up and up. And then eventually new technology or new services come out. They price very aggressively. Everyone jumps. The old service either dies or figures out that they need to become more price aggressive again. And we reset. So we're unfortunately at a point where some of these services they feel comfortable enough to raise their prices.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, honestly, I could recover a lot of that by doing a few things that I've been set as a goal for myself, like get rid of my landline. And I'm pretty close to, it's going to take a few months to actually make it happen, but I'm pretty close to getting that solved. Thanks to our buddy Sven Johansson, by the way, who recommended I buy a UMA. So I'm about ready to pull a trigger on that with my little retiree income. And I think it's like $100 for the hardware and $5 or $10 a month for an extended service that lets you basically a VoIP solution. And one of the things they allow you to do is to do a port and phone number from your landline to it. But that takes, they say in their fact that it takes, I don't know, 3 to 4 months. Even after I buy the hardware, it's going to take a little while. But that's okay. You know, my phone company charges me over $50 a month. So even if UMA charges me $10 a month for some hardware, you know, basically I break even after 3 months, something like that. So I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah, and then I come out ahead after that. So, and that's the plan for that. That recovers, well, let's see, if they charge $5 to $10 a month, it recovers about $400 a year. Am I doing the math right? Yeah, I think I'm doing the math right. $600, and I got to pay them. So $400 to $500 a year recovered, and that pays for my increase in streaming services. And there are other things I can do too, like do more Swedish death cleaning and then get rid of my rented storage unit with all my junk in it. All right. And are you seeing any price upgrade ticks too, John?
YouTube Premium hit me. Yeah. Because it's going up from, I think, $11.99 to $13.99.
And I've got the family one, so I'm getting hit even harder. But but it's still a good service. You know, it's just not just for YouTube, but the Google Music access and all of that. Although I have Apple One, so I also have iTunes access. So that's been kind of good. The other thing, speaking of streaming, I think you don't have Paramount Plus. And I will say this, it is well worth it just to watch Star Trek Strange New Worlds. with, I think, which I think just concluded its season. There's only like seven episodes, and episode seven just dropped, which is a crossover with the animated series, Star Trek Lower Decks, which I also like a lot. But anyway, that's my recommendation if you are going to add a streaming service. All right, just to see Star Trek, because I know you're a Star Trek fan like I am. Okay, next, John. Something we have been waiting for since Apple bought Siri and ruined it. So The Verge reports...
Siri might be getting smarter, according to...
Which is good, because it's been getting dumber for years. I mean, literally, it knows less now than it did before Apple bought it. So The Verge reports that Apple is already using its chatbot for internal work, and I'm kind of hoping that it means that they're going to make Siri smarter. Because Siri used to be a really useful service and not so much anymore, you know? So, I don't know. You still use Siri though, right? As I recall. You're still pretty handy.
But it's mostly just to turn on and off lights, things like that. So
you don't ask it questions.
Siri for any heavy lifting.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't have answers.
Yeah. And usually, or it gets just real confused and doesn't give you an answer to your question. It answers something else. So, yeah, it needs a cognitive upgrade of some kind. On a related note, not Siri, but on a related note, Meta, you know, the parent company of Facebook, announced that it's teaming up with Microsoft for its large language model called Llama. That's pretty clever, I have to admit. Obviously, Microsoft didn't help them name it because they would never have named it something that clever. They would have called it, you know, some 15-word description that nobody can remember. So it says we're now ready to, and I think there's been some pushback on whether or not it's really open source, but they're saying we're now ready to open source the next version of Llama 2. And making it available free of charge for research and commercial use. Doesn't say personal. We're including model weights and starting code for pre-trained model and conversational fine-tuned versions too. So, hey, you do research. You should go get a free license.
I couldn't imagine they would somehow stop you from using it for personal use. Usually personal is the low-hanging fruit. I would find it very strange if they said, no, you must use it for this amount of requests a month or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, this may be a good reason to formalize my Save the Todd Foundation and, you know, declare it a research institute and then obtain it for research purposes if I can't get it for. But really, it's a model, right? It's not a service. It's not something you can install and use. It's something you build around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not like ChatGPT, which has a model but has an exposed public interface. And I also find it interesting Microsoft is teaming up with them because they, you know, they invested in OpenAI and that's what their Bing chat is based on, is ChatGPT. So it's kind of curious that they're going with two different models. I can understand why. I just find it interesting, especially Facebook. All right, John, your topic. Yeah, man, it's a long one or lots of stuff.
It might be long. It might not be long. It all depends on we agree or how much we disagree on these things. But, you know, this is about the time of year when we start to see new features that were announced early in the year roll out, especially in the Apple ecosystem, but other ecosystems, Google I.O. and Microsoft announces things. But definitely this year with Bing AI and Copilot and stuff like that, we're starting to get to the point where things roll out. And it got me thinking about every year I get excited about certain new features, thinking, wow, that's going to be really useful. And then sometimes it is, and sometimes it is not. And so I thought it might be fun to take a look at last year's big features, and you and I can talk about if they've actually been something you've cared about or used or done anything with.
Yeah.
Or if it was just like, that was okay, but it wasn't as great as it was, you know, seeming to be.
Right.
So I've got these loosely based into different operating systems, but we can add in as we go, et cetera.
Sure.
First, you know, we'll start with iOS 16. Lock screen customizations and multiple lock screens. Is this something you've gotten so much use out of over the last year you couldn't imagine living without it?
You know, I only recently accidentally activated a non-photo lock screen. I still don't know how I did it now or how to get back. And I really haven't looked because I really like the accidental lock screen. So my lock screen has the day, date, time, and, you know, which it always had. And it has like a Bluetooth device, battery level, my AirPods Pro, for example. It's got a little weather thing. It's showing that we have, I guess, 25% chance of rain. And it has a little stock market indicator on the, at the top. And at the bottom is the usual, you know, Well, it depends on whether it's live or in the flashlight or camera button, but that's if it's, you've actually touched it. But in its dim mode, that's very useful information for me. So I'm going to give that a thumbs up, even though I don't know how I did it.
Yeah, well, that's just kind of the funny thing about it, right? If you figured out accidentally how to use it, then I think it is useful. Yeah, definitely one of the items down here is focus and focus filters and building out focus areas. And I think that has been somewhat useful as well. And you can, of course, tie lock screens and home screen layouts to it. But a lot of this does require you to go in and play with it and customize it. And if you've been a longtime iOS user, or sometimes I think a lot of longtime users of any operating system, you just don't think to go in and play with it unless you get prompted somehow, or you
right, or you decide you hate your lock screen for some reason one day that you've been using all this time.
So cool features. I have this set up a little bit with focus groups, but I don't think it's as great as Apple maybe put it out to be. This next one, live activity. So do you use anything that actually supports live activities?
I don't even know what that is, John. Can you tell me?
So right now there's a baseball game going on.
Okay.
The MLB app does support on my phone a live activity widget at the bottom to show me.
I see it.
So yeah, I can look at the phone and see it at a glance. The problem is you have to, of course, have applications that utilize live
activity.
Right. Is an obvious one. News can be an obvious one. I know on election night I was getting feeds, you know, that were live activities from different news apps. So it's useful, but man, you really have to have something you follow that you want to have.
Right. So
otherwise, it's not one of those features that will ever appeal to you.
I did not even know it existed, and I just went to go look up if it's also available for iPadOS, which it is, of course. And so that's my next thing on my list to go see if that's something I want to do. You know, I wish my
revolutionary feature, you didn't even know about it.
No. You know, and I kind of wish my Pixel tablet, which, you know, is sitting in screen lock mode display all the time, since it's a battery, you know, on a little dock. I wish that had it, or if it, maybe it doesn't, I don't know. I do want to say one thing, which I found kind of interesting, and that is I've got on my, and this is a Pixel tablet thing, I've got, when it's unlocked, you can't see it when it's locked. When it's unlocked, I've got, I guess it's called widgets. Oh, excuse me. I had to sneeze. Sorry about that. It's got widgets for both Google News and for Microsoft Bing News. Now, remember, this is on a Google Pixel tablet. The widget for Google News is absolutely stupid. It shows one article that it assumes is interesting, and that's it. And you got to open it up to see anything more. The Bing News widget, again, from Microsoft on a Google device, lets you scroll. So it has a similar size widget on your screen, but it lets you scroll. And I'm scrolling, so it shows like maybe, I don't know, it seems like five articles, which seems way more useful to me. So there you go. Microsoft's news widget is better than Google on a Google device.
That doesn't seem to surprise me. It is weird how first party doesn't always... So, speaking of something that seemed really cool, and then it did not seem to be all that interesting to me, shared tab groups in Safari.
Yeah.
So, when I saw this, I thought this was kind of open up a shared tab group, and it
would
open up the same basic tabs. And this seemed like it'd be really useful when you had something where you needed to have the same five tabs open, etc.
Right.
But here's the weird thing about it. If you close one of those tabs in that shared tab group and then you reopen that shared tab group, it's persistent. So if you're not thinking and you just close tabs, it's not like it resets to these three tabs or these five tabs,
right,
which would be kind of how I would sort of use it. So we'll go with that was an interesting feature, but the fact that you can't say always start with these three tabs or always start with these five tabs.
Right.
All you have to do is one time forget and close those tabs out, and then you switch into that shared tab group again, and all of a sudden, there's no tabs in there.
I have not used it at all. I read about it, like, and I thought, oh, that's kind of neat, you know. I was like in a little work group or something, even, but otherwise, no.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing is it shows up in the same menu as bookmarks.
Yeah.
So you think of it as persistent. You think, you know, when you go to that shared tab group, it should be like, I open these 5 bookmarks.
Right.
But instead, it updates as you go. So that's just a little weird of behavior, I think. You just had a little toggle, like, you know, always start with these 5 or remember my tabs. Maybe that would be helpful.
Yeah. And golly, I can't remember what it is now. There was Arc. Have you tried the Arc browser?
No, I have not.
Okay. I tried it. I have to say I'm not using it regularly. There are a couple of UI UX things that bother me about it, which they tout as pluses, but I don't happen to like. But I think it does a better job of managing tabs. So something to consider. Oh, your next one. I'm giving that a big thumbs up. Your next item.
You know, when I remember I can do it, it's really great. Editing and unsending messages in iMessage. You know, I had one just this week where I sent, it's always typos. It's never anything interesting in my head, but it's,
Yeah.
It's more, it helps the OCD, you know, where you just go,
that's wrong.
I don't think there's ever been a message that I've edited where the meeting wasn't apparent, you know. That is one that is a quality of life thing that I think is probably the biggest improvement from iOS 16. Just gotta say, considering that it wasn't the headlining feature of iOS 16.
You know, I have not. And you had to use the unsend, like you. I think I've not had to use the unsend message, but I have used edit a lot, mostly because I'm a terrible, SMS typist. And I even after all these years of using a touchscreen device, and you know we've used it for a long time, John, I'm still bad at it. And I always have typos. Well, actually, I frequently have typos in my text messages, especially if it's more than okay or no or yes or soon. So I've used the and like you, I see a typo on my part, and I go, ugh, I need to fix this now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the last one from iOS 16 that I was thinking about, we've talked about before, is Freeform.
Yeah.
So we've had Freeform now for a while. Are you using it? Do you think it's good? Snoozing on it?
You know, so you might recall, John, I was super excited about Freeform because I love note-taking apps. and especially ones where you can kind of draw and things like that and collaborate. And so I tried it with a bunch of people. I tried it with you, tried it with my daughter, tried it with some of our other friends. Nobody found it interesting, and I think I know why. It's because it is hard to understand its visual model. I think you lose things because it's had kind of a near infinite plane on which to write, and people open up Freeform and they go, hey, where's the thing I just created? And they don't realize you may need to scroll around or change the zoom level. And I don't know. It's just one of the things I really want to like, but I just haven't found a real use for it. Yeah, I've used it a lot, actually, initially. You know, I've kept a lot of notes there. It was pretty handy. But the lack of a web interface for using on non-Apple devices and the fact that nobody else wants to play with me on Freeform is not encouraging its use.
If it had a web interface, I think it would be great.
Yes.
That's great. The one thing that is so baffling that it doesn't even have a web view.
Yeah.
I don't even care if it's a web collaboration. I can imagine times when, especially I'm presenting something, I want to be able to use it at the whiteboard.
Yeah.
I want to be able to share my doodles, this and that. It'd be just so much easier if it could have a web URL that I could send people through iCloud. So
yeah.
It just weird to me that it's, and it isn't even, okay, if you don't want to have a share link for the general public, can't you let me see it through iCloud.com so that I could bring up
exactly.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's a cool piece of software that it's gonna die because they're not doing anything interesting with it to make it useful just you.
It's the next Siri. It's a really, really good idea, really interesting concept, and absolutely terrible execution.
Mm-hmm.
So, boom.
So, moving away from iOS, watchOS 9, you have an Apple Watch. I have an Apple Watch. Custom workout routines.
I don't work out.
Useful? Yeah. I actually have found them pretty useful, but I am still annoyed that you have to do all of the customization on the watch. you can't do any of the programming of them through the iPhone, which would make it a lot easier where I have a bigger screen where I could drag and drop things. So I'll say that that was a nice change. The new watch faces, I'd actually look up what they were because I've not used any of them.
I don't remember them either.
I think I'm using the same watch face I've used for the last 5 years mostly. And I have other watch faces I cycle through occasionally. Like if I'm at Disney World, I put on the Mickey Mouse watch face because that just seems appropriate. Otherwise, it's bizarre how watch faces are getting less and less interesting. Sleep tracking. Have you found?
No, because I need to charge my phone overnight.
Ah.
So I use a Fitbit for that.
So I have the sleep tracking through my Oura Ring and through the Apple Watch. And I get a little bit more information from the Apple Watch, but really? I get qualitatively, I could kind of show you. Basically, the Apple Watch will give me stages of sleep.
Okay.
In Apple Health.
Okay.
The Oura Ring, I think, will give me stages of sleep in its app, but it doesn't report it back to Apple Health.
Mm.
So that's really the only difference. And if I pull up the Apple Health, information on sleep, is it really that I need to have that sleep stages? I'll show you that is kind of what I'll turn off my background here.
No.
And of course, this is an audio podcast, so this is completely riveting for our listeners.
Yes, we will describe it like Mickey for this baseball game.
A line graph in, I see, awake, REM sleep, core sleep, or deep sleep.
Right.
And that is somewhat interesting to me to have that sort of graph.
Yep.
But if I go back and find a night when I don't have, it's not... it's not qualitatively that much different. It's just that I just only have the time I was asleep and the time I was awake, that sort of thing. Kind of what you're showing me on your
Fitbit. Yeah, it shows awake, REM, light.
Yeah, I'm not too convinced that it was a huge upgrade that Apple would like us to have. But I guess if you didn't have any other thing, if you didn't have an overrated, then sure. Kind of
Yeah, and I'm going to need to rethink this because this Fitbit is going to be my last Fitbit. I'm sort of fed up with Fitbit removing features in newer models and turning off features in their track web-based tracking stuff. Like we used to, like I've mentioned before, we used to be able to have informal groups of people organized to have little daily walking challenges. Which, quite frankly, I credit with helping me stay healthy during the pandemic because it's sort of like, okay, I need to get my steps in today. How's everybody else doing, And that's gone. And also the synchronization, and this harkens back to our Windows Mobile days. The synchronization with the app has become just terrible. It fails, I'm going to say, about 80% of the time. In fact, I'm waiting to synchronize now. It's taking like minutes to synchronize with a watch, sitting 2 feet away from the phone. So I don't know what's going on with that. It used to be instantaneous. So yeah, I guess I'm going to either have to get an Oura Ring or something else with better battery life because Apple Watch, I have to charge every night. Yeah.
So the graph I'm showing you now where it just shows sleep, that's just from the Oura Ring and not from the Apple Watch. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what you end up deciding to do or not do once your Fitbit goes.
Yeah. Sounds very literate, by the way, to do or not to do.
Yes.
That is the question.
And then the last thing that I was thinking about with iOS and watchOS was medication tracking.
Oh.
I don't know if you use this or tried.
No.
I tried it with vitamins that I take. It's kind of interesting. I also use it when, every so often I'll take like an ibuprofen or something.
Yeah.
Like that, and I'm curious how often that is. It's every quarter.
I've never been known.
Somewhat nice for that.
Yeah.
Hey, but of course, you have a list.
Yeah. Going back to watch faces, I saw a YouTube video of somebody looking at the next version of Apple Watch OS. And apparently, that in the next Apple Watch OS 10, you no longer just swipe to change your watch face. You're going to have to do something else, which doesn't seem too onerous, but be aware of that change. And I think there were a couple of OS 10 watch faces that I thought were actually kind of interesting, but I can't remember what they were offhand, so I guess they weren't that interesting.
Well, originally we could just swipe for watch faces. You had to always do a long press and then swipe over. So maybe going back to that, that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I'm waiting for the Peanuts-themed watch face.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan of Snoopy and Woodstock and others.
And then thinking about macOS, Ventura, and iPadOS, the stage manager.
Yeah.
I tried it, and it just didn't work for my workflow.
Same. In fact, you know, as you know, I set up a whole retiree workstation. I bought a new monitor. I bought HDMI switch. I bought that app, that anchor stand that Swin recommended. Or did I recommend to him? Well, whichever way it worked. But one of us recommended to the other. I think he recommended. And, you know, that's also a hub and a really nice stand and everything. And I plugged it in. I found out you have to have a mouse and a keyboard also before. Stage manager really works well. And no, you know, it was like, no, not really. It's not quite there yet for me.
I think it's one of those features that if you're new to using iPadOS or macOS, maybe it's useful to you. But if you're established with a Windows operating system of some kind, not Windows with a big W, but lower, you know, small W
Windows. Windowed, yeah.
It doesn't seem to be as useful. What about continuity camera? The idea that you can use your iPhone's camera as your webcam.
I've turned it on by accident.
I did the same thing. By accident. I haven't meant to. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at my video going, what angle is that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm sitting somewhere like, why am I a video with a ceiling?
Right. No, I have not used it. I think our buddy Swen has used it on some of our podcasts, and it does produce a really nice image. So I think if I were still working and I were doing like some, you know, presentation, especially to a group that maybe doesn't know me, I would want a, you know, much better screen. I think my Logitech camera that I'm using right now is pretty decent, but I might want an even better camera. And I do think the Apple, you know, iPhone 14 Pro has a much better front-facing, or I guess rear-facing, definitely rear-facing camera than anything else. So I'd use it but only for that use case. I can't see, you know, like you really don't care what I look like. We just use it for visual cues when we talk.
And the clear winner, for me, on macOS and iPadOS, the weather app.
Yeah.
Actually, having a first-party weather app seems to be the big deal from last year that I've been useful in finding. Although the radar, for whatever reason, never looked. don't quite understand that one. And then there were, in the notes from last year, there were improvements to notes, but I have no idea what they are because I've never noticed them or used them. So I use Apple Notes somewhat regularly.
I use it every day.
Brand new and wonderful.
I think with iOS, whatever we're using now, 16, I think, was it sharing or is that in a previous version? I can't remember.
It was in a previous version. Sharing's been around for a while.
Okay. I'm looking at what's new in notes. Quick notes, I've done that by accident. You know, add a quick note from your phone using enhanced scanning. I don't think I've used it for that. Mixed handwriting and text. I've played with that. Filtered notes by date. Secure notes. I've not tried that either, but that's a good idea. Secure a note with your device's passcode, touch ID, or face ID. That's a good idea, you know, since a lot of us now store, you know, a driver's license or some other, you know, PPI kind of information, social security card, and various medical cards. I should try secure notes. I have not tried that. Link notes together. I didn't even know you could do that. Link notes together.
Yeah, that was one that I remember thinking was going to be really useful. I never used it.
Yeah.
Because I just don't remember it's possible now.
Yeah. I do use share notes with my daughter because, you know, we've got a 19-hour time difference right now. And so I used to just text her stuff, you know, hey, you know, can you remember to do this or take a look at this or whatever. But now that she's in a, you know, different country and, you know, 19 time zones ahead in the future,
I've already forgotten to do what you need to do because it's in the future. Yeah.
Instead of, you know, having her phone, you know, beep with a text message at, you know, some ungodly hour, I just put it into notes and, you know, she can look at it when she gets around to it and it doesn't.
You know, that reminds me of a tip that I don't know if I've shared on the podcast because I had a conversation a few months ago with a friend about exactly that issue of sending text messages in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And because this person gets up at 4 in the morning and wants to return texts, but
yeah,
doesn't want her friends to think, you know, something is weird when they get a text at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So we actually looked it up. There is a way to schedule sending text messages.
I did not know that.
It is not the most intuitive. You go into shortcuts. So you need the shortcuts app.
Okay, okay.
You go to automations, that little third little tab.
Right.
You do a new personal automation.
Right.
And you can then set it to happen whenever you want, you know, 9 a.m. Fortunately, it has to be daily, weekly, monthly, or whatever. It's supposed to be a regularly running thing.
Right.
But you set your time.
Right.
And then you can actually choose send a text message or send a message.
Man, this sounds complicated.
Yeah. So what we did and what I built, and I have used it, is it sends the message, and then it sets a reminder for me to turn off the automation so that the next day at whatever time, 9 a.m., doesn't resend the same message to that person and they think I've lost my mind because I'm sending them the same thing every morning at 9 a.m. But if you did want to, you could send the same message every morning at 9 a.m. if you want. But it is useful to know, especially if you think to yourself, if I send this right now, they're going to miss it or they're not going to notice it. Maybe I should send it at 5 o'clock today, but I'm going to forget because that's, you know, I'm going to be busy. You could do this. It does work. But yeah, it is not intuitive at all, but it's built right into the Shortcuts app. So no third party app. That's at least nice.
You know, one thing I wish Notes would get that I don't think it has is that, you know, you can have a bullet item list, check circle list, bullets that you can check on or off in Notes, which I use for my shopping lists, and you can share it and so forth and so on. And it will sort whether it's checked or unchecked, but it won't sort alphabetically. And I would like it to sort, do a double sort. You know, I would like it to sort alphabetically and then sort whether it's checked or unchecked. Because a lot, my shopping lists are maybe not convoluted. They're long, right? And you don't buy the same thing every time you go to the grocery store. And so so sometimes I'll like, oh, I have like two onions in here or, you know, something because I just couldn't find it in the long list. And I put a new list item. So if Apple could, you know, allow you to sort lists alphabetically and whether or not it's checked or unchecked, that saved me a whole lot of heartache. So Apple, if anybody's listening, you know, our five listeners, make it happen before I die. You know, I'm not asking like for 17 because that's already coming out before I die, which is not that long. So, you know, don't like put it in your in your far future list. You know, some of us are getting older. Which is better than an alternative, as they say.
And then I took a look at a few things outside of Apple, Microsoft 365. They rolled out an authentication change in the last year I'm not a fan of because it broke the Apple Watch app.
Oh.
It used to be that I would get a push notification for, is this you signing in? And I could hit on my watch, accept, and that was good enough. Now I have to put in most cases, a two-digit number.
Yeah.
That either it gives me one of three options and I have to choose the one that it's showing me on the screen, or I have to type in the number,
right,
which is more secure, but is very annoying because it killed the Apple Watch.
Yeah. You know, I say maybe it's because I'm an old fart, pardon my language. But before I retired, you know, we had to authenticate to log in for like everything, especially if you were coming in outside of our LAN. And so, I never used Authenticator. People would look at me like, what is wrong with you? Why don't you just use the the Microsoft Authenticator? I go, you know what? I'm fine with it sending me a text message with a number to type in, like a 4 or 6 digit text message. It says, I'm perfectly fine with that. And the SMS text messages will get to me in places where I don't have data.
The only thing that's going to fall apart is when someone hijacks your phone number.
Yeah. Yeah. Which never.
So that is why I rally against SMS as a means of authentication. But
it's, you know, it's a two thing. It's a two part thing. You need my password and you need my, you know, my one time code. So I was fine.
If they get your password, they'll be very motivated to steal your phone number.
That's very true. Very true. But anyway,
they might be able to because they have your password. So that's sort of the problem. Once they get in, if they can figure out how to hide.
I'm not convinced Authenticator is all that secure anyway. You know, Microsoft's been penetrated many, many
times,
including recently.
And then another thing that I am very happy about has been Bing AI.
Yes.
Or an image generator. All three of those have been unexpected, very useful things in the last year.
I have not used Designer and image generators as I thought I would, but boy howdy, am I using the Bing AI chatbot a whole heck of a lot. To the point where I've now installed Bing apps on all of my mobile devices, Apple and Android alike. I go to Bing all the fact. I think I put the Apple, not the Apple. I put the Microsoft Start app on my iPhone because I'm so happy with Bing AI, even though the Start app is not a Bing AI thing. But yeah, Bing AI, despite its issues, which, you know, as long as you're aware of, I think you're okay. And you do some fact checking on your own. Go, that doesn't sound right to me. Do some external validation. Yeah, boy, it's really an interesting way to get started for finding information. It's been, and I don't really use ChatGPT because, you know, I only have the free account and I think you're limited to an X number of queries and blah, blah, blah. Sometimes it's hard to log into. At least it used to be when I was first using it. It was like, you know, too many people or whatever. So yeah, but even Google, and I say even Google Bard, because I don't think Google Bard is quite caught up with the ChatGPT, OpenAI ChatGPT / Bing, Microsoft Bing chat. So, but I use Bard a little too.
And the last thing on my list is just one that I've noticed lately is that iCloud photo search.
Do you really think that?
Good. It's almost on par with Google Photos.
Really?
Searching for text inside of things and even searching for specific things, I've been able to find them. I know, I was just as shocked as you, but I've been able to do some searching in iCloud Photos and went, wow, it actually found that, or it actually, you know, was able to locate it.
Well, I tell you something. So, okay, for maybe text, it might be fine, but I just tried something. And so in Hawaii, we have a lot of colorful sunsets. So I typed in red sky in Apple Photo on my iPhone. And I'm on my desktop now, and I'm going to search for red sky. And on my iPhone, it comes up with 6 photos, of which only one has an actual red sky, by the way. And in Google Photos, it's coming up with, I don't know how many, lots and lots. And I have to say, not all of them have a red sky, which is kind of surprising. But at least it's coming up with more than, one. So I'm pleased with that. In fact, I am kind of surprised. Why is it not showing? Why is it showing something's wrong? But for the most part, it's showing a lot more than Apple Photos. I don't know. What about
Plow? I think it's getting there. I don't think it's quite there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had good luck finding text and finding even, basic things like truck or, sky. Now, when you get to adding modifiers like red sky, then it starts to get a little iffy.
Yeah. Well, I still like Google Photos, even though the unlimited upload days are gone. And, I actually, as I mentioned to you, I think a week or two ago, I had to actually pay $10 more a year to double my Google storage from 100 gigabytes to 200 gigabytes. But, for $10, that's fine. I also now get a discount on order from the Google store, so I should have done that before I bought my tablet. But that's okay. I would have gotten, I think, 3% discount or something, which is nothing you sneeze at when you're buying a $500 device. Yeah.
That was my list. We'll have to see what this year actually is useful and what isn't.
Yeah. And I've got iOS 17 Beta 3, the public beta, running on my iPhone. What model is it? 10S, maybe? And it's, aside from the standby mode, where when you plug it in, put in landscape, it shows you like time and calendar or something else, I really haven't seen anything that grabs me. And I think it's because iOS 17 in particular really wants you to interact with other people using iOS 17 for, the new collaborative, communicative features. So I guess we'll see. And while this is we're nearing the end of July, and I expect the new iOS, iPadOS to come out in September or so. So, in about 2 months, we'll be able to test these out ourselves, John, with our upgraded device, iOS and iPadOS devices.
We shall see.
We shall see indeed. All righty. So, this has been Mobile Views Podcast 467. I want to thank the good Dr. Westfall, as usual, for taking time to chat with me and try to keep my aging mind active. And we'll talk to you next time. Thank you, John.